What up, everybody? Welcome into Locked On Warriors. I'm your host, Charles T. Hamilton. Going to be joined by co-host Wes Goldberg in just a minute. The Dubs took on the Milwaukee Bucks in Giannis Antetokounmpo last night. A valiant effort from the Dubs, but again, you're going up against the MVP and one of the best teams in the game. You're probably going to lose. And that's what happened. But there were some bright spots, some good moments as well. Alan Smilagic introduced himself to Dub Nation once again. And Damian Lee, soon enough, going to be a part of the 15-man roster. And what kind of dominoes will fall because of that? That's all coming up next here on Locked On Warriors on the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What up, everybody? Welcome into Locked On Warriors. I am your host, Charles T. Hamilton. Another good one for you, as always. Wes Goldberg joining me in just a minute. Dubs taking on the Milwaukee Bucks. A good effort, a good game plan. But you're just going up against a team with a whole lot more talent than you. And that's basically what happened. Talent overcame all the things that the Warriors were trying to throw at the Bucks. And, yeah, that's about it. No, the Dubs played well. They played hard. And there were some good performances by a number of different role players. And you just see with this team how much better they're going to be. They're going to be better when they get the, you know, two-time MVP back and one of the best shooters in the world and another 23-year-old All-Star. Yeah, they will be a lot better when they get those guys back. But you just see with the guys that they have playing, these future role players, just how good they're going to be surrounding that core of Hall of Famers and an All-Star. I won't call D'Lo a Hall of Famer yet. But first things first, I do got to shout out my man Omari Spellman showing up to the game in a Bobby Boucher jersey. Shout out SCLSU Mud Dogs, okay? From the movie The Waterboy, you guys. So check that out. Oh! Mud Dogs. All right. Anyways, enough of that. Going to bring in Wes here to break down the game and some things off the court as well regarding the Warriors. But first, this spring, follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Amazing weather, landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. It's a one-of-a-kind spring training experience. You can follow your favorite baseball teams to Arizona for Cactus League. 10 stadiums, 15 MLB teams, 75-degree temperatures. All 10 stadiums are in Greater Phoenix. Within 50 miles, you can hit up every single stadium. You get to meet the players, get their autographs before games. I mean, honestly, it's one of the best experiences you can have if you're a baseball fan. It's similar to Summer League for NBA. You're out there schmoozing with the baseball players. You're bumping into them at restaurants and bars. You're having casual conversations with these guys. It is awesome. I can't urge you enough, if you're a baseball fan, to go see. Check out my A's. Go bump into Matt Chapp and tell him I said what's up. There's tons to see and do outside of baseball. You can check out amazing restaurants and bars, tons of craft breweries like Four Peaks, Angels, Trumpet Ale House, and Goldwater Brewing Company. Tons of live music and national sports. You can explore museums featuring everything from native heritage to modern art, musical instruments from around the world. Arizona is also known for its incredible landscapes, thrilling outdoor adventures. Hit the road, explore Arizona's urban centers, ghost towns, artsy communities, and quirky outposts. Then get back for a baseball game. There's hiking, biking, jeep tours, hot air balloons, skydiving, jet skiing, or just taking in the sunset. No matter what you love to do, Arizona has you covered. You can check off must-see destinations from your bucket list, like the Grand Canyon, Monument Valley, Horseshoe Bend, and Tucson. Bring the kids along to spring training. Arizona is a fantastic destination for families. Family-friendly resorts and hotels offer plenty of fun for the kids of all ages, water parks to horseback rides to games and activities. Arizona has tons of stuff for kids to do and see, like wildlife parks, science museums, aquariums, and dude ranches. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/spring training. That is visitarizona.com/spring training. Wes, you, of course, were at the game, which turned out to be pretty good. I mean, compared to what I expected coming in, a 9-point loss to the one of the best records in the game, the reigning MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo, had himself a down game, I guess you could say. And a major part of that was the game plan they had against him, similar to the one they had against James Harden, where it was, we're going to, you know, try and limit their best player and have the other guys beat us. And not as effective as the one against James Harden, but I mean, if you're the Warriors, you got to be, again, I hate the moral victories, but you got to be feeling okay coming out of this one.
Yeah, I think you just nailed it right there. It was the only other time this season the Warriors have devised a game plan specifically tailored to the other team's best player. And it just turns out that the other team's best player in each of those cases was an MVP candidate, like one of the top two MVP guys last year. In Giannis's case, he was the MVP last year. He's got a really good shot at being MVP again this year. And they took away, like with Harden, they took away that left side. They took away that step back three, his pet move. And with Giannis, the goal was to take away his ability to get to the rim. And Steve Kerr before the game said, when Giannis gets to the rim, it's a 100% shot. Like, he is going to make that 100% of the time. And when he shoots threes, as he's been doing more and better lately, it's still a 30% shot. He basically said, I'll take the 30% shot over the 100% shot, and that's basically what they did. And it was interesting. It was sort of a zone, but not really. When Giannis would bring the ball up as the de facto point guard that he is, you would have three Warriors at a time just sort of forming a wall in front of him, and the idea was to just dare him to try to get by, or better yet, make him settle for a three-pointer. He took quite a few three-pointers tonight. He got some guys involved, and the Warriors, I was talking to a couple players after the game, and they basically said, look, when you do that against Giannis, when you kind of crash at him and you just send extra help towards him all the time, you're going to give up open shots to the rest of the team. And this is a team with guys like Kyle Korver and Chris Middleton, guys who can make open threes, but they said that they were willing to have to close out late on those guys. They were willing to give up a few wide open shots as long as they limited Giannis. And that just speaks to how much they respect Giannis and how dangerous Giannis is. And similar, again, like what you said, with what they were willing to do with James Harden and the Houston Rockets. So, yeah, it wasn't as effective as it was against Harden. I think they did frustrate him at times. You know, you could see him kind of shaking his shoulders and getting a little exasperated, sighing here and there. But at the end of the day, I just think that the talent gap was so wide with Milwaukee that the Warriors just couldn't overcome it.
No question. And before we get into the players and the individual performances, you know, no one mentioned it specifically, but assuming Jaren Collins came up with his game plan like the one against Houston, that to me is the headline is, you know, a guy like Jaren Collins, who's basically taken over that quote unquote defensive coordinator role from Ron Adams. I mean, so far so good in my opinion.
Yeah. And like against Houston, they saw what the Toronto Raptors did against the Rockets and adjusted for their own personnel. Jaren Collins did for the Warriors own personnel. And they did the same thing tonight. This is what the San Antonio Spurs like to do against Giannis. And we remember that the San Antonio Spurs kind of created the blueprint to stop LeBron James in that one, in the Cleveland Spurs finals or the Cavaliers Spurs finals. They created the blueprint of how to stop LeBron. And it's not dissimilar to what the Spurs did and what the Warriors did tonight against Giannis, which is, okay, like, we understand you're deadly from everywhere on the court, but we're going to dare you to shoot. And, you know, again, it didn't result in a win, but I think what you said was exactly right, where, okay, this is not really a year about wins. It's just really a year about showing that you can execute these type of things and elevate your game in these sort of moments. And I think the Warriors definitely did that.
No question. The funny part also, I mean, Giannis did come on towards the end, but even when limiting him, he still ended with 30 points and 13 rebounds. I mean, that guy is...
doesn't that remind you what the Warriors used to be, though? Like, that was what the Warriors could just, like, kind of sleepwalk through 3.5 quarters, just the entire game. It's still just because they're so much more talented than everybody else, end up with a comfortable win. And that's really what Milwaukee had. I know the game was like kind of close towards the end, but this was a comfortable win for the Bucks. There was not a point during that game where anybody could have realistically thought the Warriors were going to win. And they didn't play that well. And the Warriors' defense was pretty effective. And this is just sort of like the Warriors are sort of facing the new class of the NBA. And it's remarkable how quickly the balance of power in the league can shift, even if just for 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors, you nailed it. All it had to be was, like, play 5 good minutes of basketball and you'll get a double-digit win. And that's what we saw with Milwaukee tonight. But I do want to give some credit to the Dubs as well, because they did play pretty hard on a night where it felt sluggish to start. You know, when the crowd was given something to cheer about, they definitely did, but it just seemed kind of, I don't know, sluggish is the best way to put it. And I mean, it's funny using that term, if you heard about, what is it?
Oh God. Yeah.
They, Beeline, they, or what's his
they
name
were slugs. Cleveland, they were yeah. playing slugs.
Yes. Yeah. Playing slugs. But it just felt, it did feel a little lethargic at the beginning. I mean, did you get that vibe at all, being there?
Yeah, I thought, I think actually it was because it was, the 7 o'clock start kind of threw everything off. Mm-hmm. It was set, usually these games start at 7:30, but because it was on ESPN, it starts at 7 o'clock. It's ESPN's genius way of figuring out how to boost TV ratings, as if anybody on the East Coast is going to stay up for 10, as if they when they weren't going to stay up for 10:30. But whatever, they're grasping at straws at this point. But it did throw everything off, and I actually was wondering if this was going to be the case because. We know San Francisco. Like, mm-hmm. if you need to get into San Francisco at 7 versus 7:30, that can be a big difference when you're trying to cross the bridge or get out of work or whatever like that. And I thought that the stands were a little empty, predictably, and for good reason in that first quarter. And then people started to file in finally. And I think everybody's, you know, body clocks right around 7:30 started to get into gear and the game started to take off from there. But it did feel a little slug-like. In the first quarter, emphasis on the S there.
Yeah, the S, the SL for sure. Also, you know, something I was thinking about recently is just the fact that, you know, the Warriors, this is game 39 for them. I think the only other team that's played at least 39 games is Charlotte. I think they played 40. So we're right at about the midway point, and we're seeing some lethargic play, I'll put it that way, but also we're seeing it come out in different ways, like, you know, Jimmy Butler and TJ Warren tonight. And
oh, my God.
Bobby Portis last night against the Lakers. Like, I think we're starting to see some a number of teams and players that, you know, could use this All-Star break coming up.
That's a really good point. It does feel like this. Everybody's sort of at their fatigue breaking point right now. And I think when you see guys get tired, you see guys lose their temper a little bit easier. We saw Steve Kerr get thrown out of Sacramento the other night. Like, so I think great. This is right about that time where you're right. It's like February really can't come close enough. And it's also this time of the year where everybody's sort of figuring out. I mean, the Warriors, we knew what the Warriors were going to be. The Warriors knew what they were going to be basically after the fourth game of the season. Actually, even before that, if you talk to the Warriors. But a lot of these other teams in the NBA are starting to figure out right where they stand right about now. About a month away from the trade deadline. We're looking ourselves in the mirror. What are we doing? It's time to pause, reflect within the new year and figure out what the rest of the season is going to look like. And it's interesting that this season, I saw Fred Katz tweet this out maybe today or yesterday, that there is no middle class in the league, really, other than the Oklahoma City Thunder, literally the only team. There is no middle class in the NBA. Every team is basically projected at this point. They're on pace at this point to win 38 games or less, or like 50 plus games. That's remarkable. And I think that is sort of showing in a lot of these matchups. You have a Miami Heat team versus a Phoenix Suns team, or who does TJ Warren play for? The Pacers? Who does the Heat play?
Pacers.
Yeah. And like, you know, the Pacers are probably like, okay, what are we really? And they're going to probably not win a whole bunch of games this year. And things like that come out. And Jimmy Butler and the Miami Heat are just rolling through the Eastern Conference right now, and they're feeling confident and cocky and stuff like that. So, we're reaching that breaking point.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to get to some of the specifics of the game because there were some nice moments for a couple of different players for the Dubs, especially one 19-year-old that really seemed to get the crowd going, really endearing himself to the Dub Nation, so to speak. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute. Wes, so you mentioned it earlier, and I mean, you nailed it right on the head. There was no point during tonight's game where it really felt like the Warriors were going to be able to pull it out. You know, they got it within five a couple times late in the fourth. I think the closest they got, or at least the one I remember, was 56-59. They were down three, and then, you know, Milwaukee puts up like eight straight or something like that. So it was never really in question, but the Dubs did still have some nice moments, some nice pockets of play, and one of the main ones was Alan Smailagić getting more NBA time. 11 minutes tonight, he went 4-7 from the field, 1-2-3, and a career-high 10 points. Still lost at times and stuff like that, but definitely just a fun part of tonight's game. was seeing the 19-year-old get some minutes and play well.
And it's funny, he actually got the podium tonight too. Nice. And the Warriors PR guru Raymond Ritter kind of was elbowing him a little bit when he was coming off the podium. He was like, next time to get up here, you need 20 points. Alan turns to Raymond and goes, I need more minutes. Like, that's wonderful. Like, how do you not love that? I love that confidence. I love, like, this guy barely speaks English, and just for him to be like that quick-witted, it just bowled the room over. It was a career night for him. He drilled a nice looking 3-pointer from the corner that at one point cut the lead to one. Had a nice rebound, a couple of nice muscly rebounds. And like when you're going up against a team like Giannis, like the Bucks with Giannis, it's really easy to kind of try to maybe overthink the game a little bit. Maybe try to maybe play it safe, take the points when you get it, take sort of what the defense gives you kind of thing, because the Bucks also have the best defense in the NBA. But Smiljanić wasn't doing that. He just would get the ball. He's like, there, I have the ball. The basket's right there. I'm going to go do that. I'm just going to put the ball in there. And oftentimes he did. And after the game, we were asking him, like, do you know what you're doing? And he's like, no, I have no idea what I'm doing out there. I'm just trying to score. And it's just like, how he's managed to do this. And like, you don't want to make too much out of 10 points in a loss, but watching him, like, he passes the eye test so much. Like, his basketball feel is so great. And everybody around him raves about how much he's just picking up the game. It really is. It's kind of the most fun development so far this season, and what has surprisingly been full of some fun developments.
Yeah, and, you mentioned you don't want to give it too much credit, but, again, it's a 19-year-old who's not even fully grown being able to come in and do this. So it is a nice little piece of like you said, man, a season full of fun developments, even though they are, 9-30 right now. Steve Kerr did mention after the game, though, that he wants him back in the G League, and he will eventually be there, get himself, 30-plus minutes a night, just learn the game of basketball more. I don't think he mentioned it, but I have to ask you, since you were there, did he say anything about Jordan Poole possibly going back down to the G League as well? Because
No, he didn't.
I don't love the fact that they brought him up after 3 games. I would love to see him continue to play well down there like he did, but, he's in the rotation now and not playing well for the NBA team. So I just, I don't know. That's just one of my nitpicks so far, I guess. I mean, what do you think? Should they send him back down there? He was playing well in the G League, and they bring him back up, and he continues to play bad for the Warriors.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with the injuries that they're dealing with. I mean, Steve said that Kai Bowman's going to go down as soon as D'Angelo Russell's ready, and it wouldn't shock me if Jordan Poole also went down at the same time. They don't need Jordan Poole up here. He's not soaking up a ton of minutes. It's just when you have a guy like D'Angelo who can go out there and give you 30 to 35 quality minutes a night, it takes more than just Kai Bowman to soak up those minutes. So once D'Angelo comes back, I think you'll see Kai go back down, maintain the whatever days left he has on that two-way contract. And then I think you also see Jordan go down there too, and potentially Smiley as well. I mean, you could see that trio just all go down there right around the same time.
Sure. One of the tough parts of this season is Marquese Chris did get cut, but one of the developments of that is Amari Spellman played 18 minutes tonight. He's going to be getting more minutes, and it seems like he's probably a better fit as a stretch five that can play some four, as opposed to vice versa, a four that might be able to play some five. He had himself a nice game tonight, was 3 of 5 from the 3-point line, that energy that he plays with, 5 rebounds. It was good to see, and I think it might be a better fit for him playing more five than he was before. I mean, what do you think about that?
I think that's probably part of why the Warriors felt comfortable in waiving Marquese Chris, is they probably think the same thing. It's telling that Steve Kerr compares Amari Spellman and his floor spacing ability to Mo Spates. And Mo Spates obviously played only the five for Golden State. And I think that, he looks at Willie Cauley-Stein as sort of JaVale McGee 2.0. And, if you can sort of rebuild a center rotation with guys that had success in Golden State, and you have Willie Cauley-Stein as maybe your starting center, you've got Amari Spellman there. Of course, Kevon Looney didn't play tonight. He's going to have to factor into that as well. But we saw them go with three centers for most of the night. If you assume that Smilagic goes back to the G League when Kevon Looney gets healthy, maybe you're just replacing Smilagic's minutes with Kevon's. And I think you have an interesting sort of utility there at the five spot. I agree with you. I think Omari Spellman's better suited at the five. You ask a little bit less of him defensively. It also lets you play Pascal more as your backup four behind Draymond Green. And I think it just sort of it makes a little bit more sense. And we saw them go to that pick and pop with Omari early and often. And Spellman's 3-point shooting has been on fire lately. And that's, you know, Steve Kerr loves being able to open the floor up with the five, and he definitely does that.
No question. And the other thing is too, he's proven he can play some four in a pinch. But I just think the five is the better spot for him in general. You mentioned Willie Cauley-Stein, double-double tonight, 10 points, 11 rebounds. Again, I keep saying it, you know, I hope he's around to be able to play for the fully healthy Warriors, because I think he'd be a great fit. But again, we have no idea what will happen with the trade deadline and all of that. Kind of in that same vein, Damian Lee, another solid game from him, 15 points, 4 of 8 from 3. And, you know, I've been waiting to see what the specifics of his contract will be. I'm sure we'll get it in the next couple of days. I think they're just actually literally using every single day on his two-way contract before they sign him to an NBA contract. Yeah. But I wanted to ask you – well, go ahead.
Marquise Chris first needs to clear waivers. They waived him late Monday night.
Okay.
It's Wednesday night as we're recording this. So we could see something happen as soon as tomorrow. Though the impression that I'm getting is that it may last a little bit longer tomorrow. He may not practice in order to save that one two-way day just in case. But the Warriors are practicing Thursday. Damian may or may not be a part of that practice. He may instead be finalizing his contract, which from what I understand from people I've talked to, it sounds like this will be a multi-year contract with probably some non-guarantees or some partial guarantees or something like that, but something that at least gives him much more stability than what would be basically a half season expiring contract at this point.
Yeah, definitely. And I expect him to be with the team next year, as good as he's played this year. Unless the game falls off a cliff, there's no reason to think that he won't be on the team and part of the rotation next year, the way he's played. And it's so crazy to me, man, seeing guys like him not be on a roster in this age of, you know, no team can have enough 3-and-D wings. And a guy like Damian Lee, you know, hasn't found a spot until he's 27. But again, you know, it just happens that way. But what I wanted to ask you was, there's a week until the deadline for the two-way players to sign a two-way player, a two-way contract.
Right.
And have you heard any rumblings as to if they're going to use it? To me, I mean, I know there was a lot of moving parts as far as cutting Marquise Chris and moving Damian Lee. But part of the benefit was that you were going to be able to use a two-way contract. If they don't, like, that's a minor failure on their part, if you ask me, if they don't end up signing another two-way player, even if it's not the perfect one, you know?
Yeah, they've understandably been pretty tight-lipped about this, because you don't want to, even league sources say, type of deal, say who you want to sign while you haven't gotten Damian Lee onto a standard contract and opened up that last two-way spot. And then have somebody else be like, oh, the Warriors are interested? Well, look how much success they've had with two-way players. Let's keep that guy up. So I know that they have a plan. I know that they have a short list of people that they want to promote to that. And you're absolutely right when you say that that was part of the motivation of doing it now, doing this early so that you can get that extra body up there. But they will not say who it is for obvious reasons.
No question. I got some ideas. Maybe I'll hit up Bob, let him know. You know,
sure. Yeah. Give him a call.
Yeah, I'll send him the G League stats page and just highlight 3-point percentage or something like that. Well, you know, another night, another loss. But like I said, as much as I hate moral victories, I think there were some tonight. And that's a good thing moving forward. Wes, man, I assume you enjoyed the 7 o'clock tip because you're out of there earlier. So I'll talk to you tomorrow. And thank you, everyone, for listening to Locked On Warriors on the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on the Golden State Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.